Thank you, Cece. It's my pleasure to introduce our speaker today. I hope you enjoy his talk. His name is Greg. Greg, would you come on?
Hi, I'm Greg, and I'm a grateful alcoholic.
Hey.
By God's grace, I've been sober since November 13th of 2010, and I'm so thankful for that. Okay. First things first, I'd like to pray. And I'd like to pray from page 99 of the 12 and 12. Prayer commonly known as St. Francis Prayer. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Everybody said?
Amen.
Man, there's a lot of people here. I'm just going to think of it as like just a big living room full of my friends, and it's my turn to talk, okay? Express that what an honor it is to be up here at Club 12 talking to you guys. Just a big honor. Thanks to Roger for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I guess my overwhelming feeling right now is just one of gratitude. And I'm grateful for the founders, Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, and the other early folks that started this program that I'm just so grateful to be a member of, and I'm just so happy to have been a member of such a fellowship that there's just miracles all the time. And I'm also extremely grateful to live in San Antonio, where there's such a commitment to recovery. I've just been involved, and all my friends are in recovery in San Antonio, and it's so nice to be involved in such activities of meaning and purpose, and to continue to see miracles all across this city. And I'm also very grateful for my home group, which is Serendipity, where I'm just on a daily basis, I'm just sitting in the front row observing miracles. I'm just so grateful for that. Kind of reminds me of a story of about a miracle, about this police officer that was driving down the road. And he observed a car weaving, okay? And he pulled him over. The police officer went to the driver's side window and rapped on the window, and the guy rolled down the window, and he said, and the police officer said, you know, first of all, just notice, just he was almost knocked over with the smell of alcohol. And he asked the guy, he goes, "Sir, have you been drinking?" And the guy looked at the police officer straight in the eye, and he goes, "No, officer, I have not been drinking." And the officer looked down in the console, and he said, and he saw a cup, one of those red, you know, Dixie cups. And he goes, "What's in the cup, sir?" And the guy looked at the officer very confidently and said, "There's water in that cup." And the officer said, "May I see that cup?" And the guy said, "Sure," and handed the officer the cup. The officer smelled the cup, He said, "Sir, there's wine in that cup." And the guy, his jaw dropped, a big old grin came on his face, and he said, "Golly, Jesus done did it again." Yeah. Miracles everywhere. Just a tad bit about my background. I'm divorced. I have a wonderful girlfriend. I have three kids. My family tree is just laden with alcoholism, addictions. I have had tragedies, deaths, early deaths as a result in my family, as a result of this dreaded disease. Thought about, you know, what my hope was for today's talk. I mean, truly, it's just for me to say one thing that might be useful to one person, and my hope is that happens. I want to kind of break it down as far as sharing my story and the way I was, what happened, and what it's like now. The way I was is, let me just ask, in the beginning of this, let me ask y'all a question. If we can kind of keep this informal just right now, and if y'all can just shout out your answer, I'm just curious, but what was the age of your earliest memory? Shout it out.
2, 3, 25.
I want to hear your story. Okay. Any others over here? 4. That was mine. Oh, yours is 5? 9 months. Man. Wow. I want to hear your story too. But mine was 4. And I remember that I was living in Illinois. And we were from Houston, but we moved up for a year assignment with my dad. We were in a trailer house, and I was 4 years old. This is my earliest memory. And my sister was just brought home. She was just born. She was brought home from the hospital, and she was in the crib. I mean, she was like home like 2 or 3 days, okay? And I remember thinking, this is my first memory, that what can I do to make my mommy and daddy proud of me? Because I always had a feeling of less than, okay? And I had to do something to earn something. And so I thought it was a good idea to crawl into the crib, which I did, pick up my, you know, basically less than a week old baby sister, crawl out of the crib. We lived in a trailer house, and we all shared a room, me, my brother, and my little sister at the time, and walk down the hall to present her to my mom, and maybe I'd be a big boy, and she'd be proud of me. Well, I did that, and I didn't drop her. Walked down the hall, and let's just say that my mom was not overcome with gratitude for that, okay? And her scream, I think, is still reverberating across the state of Illinois. But I mentioned that because that was my first memory of feeling less than, and basically until I came into the room of alcoholics and started, you know, practicing this gift of the steps, that just dominated my life. I was raised primarily by my mother, my hero. She took me to church all the time. I went 7 days a week, never on Saturdays, but twice on Sundays. I went to one of these churches where they really dissected the verses in the Bible, and I learned a lot, all right? I learned a lot about everything, but how to have a relationship with God and how to receive God's love. My first drink was a Falstaff beer. I was about 11 or 12 years old. Curtis, give me a thumbs up. Okay. Falstaff beer. There's nothing really remarkable about that. I was pouring some concrete with my dad. And the only two things I remember is I felt like accepted, because it was a rite of passage, because my dad gave me a beer, like, you know, I earned something with me, kind of like me. And then I just remembered it tasted just terrible. I started drinking regularly, I guess, in high school. And I always drank to get drunk. I never really drank, you know, hey, I'll have a beer or two or three. It was just until I got drunk. It's always been that way. I sometimes lived with friends and family, my upbringing, it was kind of volatile. I didn't have a lot of stability, so I would go live with friends for a while or family. And I got, my senior year of high school, I had a big, right after football season, I had a big discussion with my stepfather. We didn't get along. Well, it was a discussion that left 15 holes in the sheetrock in our house. I immediately dropped out of school, got my GED, and I joined the Air Force. Drinking became more of a priority. I was drinking on the job. I had a job to where we guarded, you know, special security areas like munitions places, secret places, and we would drink and do other things on the job. And there was this one guy that told on one of my friends for doing that, and my friend got in trouble. And I got loaded one night and went to this guy that ratted out my friend on the third floor of his dorm, and I barged in and I hung him outside of the window by his ankles, okay? And that was the first time I got thrown in jail, all right? And the government, you know, told me they no longer needed my services, okay? And so I got back to Houston and I started a company in the telecommunications field. And a friend of mine and I, we owned the company, and you know, we didn't make any money, but our business cards looked good, you know. And it was a lot of credibility in the bars, you know. I showed, you know, president, yeah. And but I paid my bills by working at the department store called Foley's, okay, on the weekends and a couple nights during. Everybody remember Foley's? And this is kind of embarrassing, but I recall several times that more times than I like to admit. Is that I'd stay up all night drinking and partying and go straight to Foley's to work and without any sleep. And then I would go to the restroom, you know, periodically, just get some rest, man. Just sit on the commode and take a little 10-minute cat nap. And then I'd sit on the commode and take a little cat nap, and I'd hear from click of high heels in the bathroom, and I'd look under the stall, and man, I'd say, oh God, I'm in the woman's restroom again. Okay. And then I'd raise my feet so no one could see my man shoes and then sneak out. Okay. I remember this friend that I was in business with, he had a family that had a son that was in some kind of trouble, I didn't know, but from Ohio, and he asked if he could come stay with me for a while. And I had an apartment, and I said, sure, no problem. And he came and stayed with me for a while. I didn't know him. But one thing that was weird, guys, is this guy, he would never sleep. He would, I mean, I'd you know, be a passed out drunk, but at least I'd get some Z's, okay? But he would never sleep, and I found out that he was doing coke. And I said, I'll try some of that, okay? And first of all, let me just say that I'm a bona fide alcoholic, all right? A bona fide alcoholic. But that's part of my story. And as a bona fide alcoholic, it's just an example of me wanting more. And fortunately, I was 21 years old at the time. I didn't own a bunch, but I lost it all in about a month, okay? I'm glad I didn't own a lot of them. About 22, I met my future wife there in Houston. We moved into a 650 square foot apartment, and I was just always no boundaries, making irrational decisions, no reasoning skills. Like I got loaded one day, and thought it was a good idea to buy a dog. And dogs are cute, you know. There's no problem with dogs, right? Okay, but you know, a couple of things I didn't consider. One is, you know, a Great Dane is not exactly the right dog to buy for a 650 square foot apartment. And number two is I didn't have any money, so I went around town writing bad checks, you know, floating checks, okay, bad checks. That caught up to me, and that was the second time I got thrown in jail. And I started climbing the ladder in my career, buying bigger houses, not being in present. I missed important functions with my family. My drinking, I started drinking more. I passed out drunk every night. My wife had to do the important stuff, the heavy lifting with the family, you know, and took care of the kids. And I thought of only myself, and my only contribution was financial. In the late 90s, I moved to San Antonio, this great city, for my dream job. I was a vice president with the company with 450 people working for me, but I still felt less than I was just a scared little boy inside. I drank more and more alone. My MO is I would come home to my garage. I wouldn't really go out that much. I'd go to my garage, and there was three of us there, me, myself, and I. We'd have a little meeting, okay? And we, you know, pretty soon things started settling down. The squirrels in the cage got quieter, okay? And I did that every night, okay? And just passed out every night. I started doing good at my job, given more responsibility. So I started becoming, an egomaniac, with my current, inferiority complex. And but nothing could make me happy, and I was totally miserable. My mom from Houston would come to visit me. I love her so much. She's, as I mentioned before, she's my hero. And she would have to go home early because she couldn't just bear watching me and watching me destroy myself. She would say, "Greg, go get help. Greg, go get help. Greg, go get help." I said, "I don't need help." And finally, I went to a counselor at a church for my depression problem. Okay, I was depressed, all right? And about 15 minutes into my talk with Gene, counselor at the church, he said, "Greg, I think you got an alcohol problem." And I go, "Okay, whatever that is." And he gave me the number of someone to call. And the name of the guy that I called was Manny V. He became my first sponsor. And Manny, I called him over the phone. He goes, "Hey, you know where Club 12 is?" And I didn't. But my first thought when he asked me, "Do you know where Club 12 is?" Because that's where he wanted to meet. I said, "How strange. Why would someone who knows I have an alcohol problem ask me to meet him at a club?" Okay? And I had no knowledge about anything. And he goes, "Well, it's over there by North Star Mall." And I said, "Well, I'd know where that is." And he goes, "You want me to give you directions?" And I go, "No, I'm in control. I know everything. I can find it." So at the appointed time, I drove over to North Star Mall, looked across the street, and, said, "Where the heck's Club 12? And I went driving back and forth down San Pedro, and I stopped at a few bars, and I walked in and said, "Hey, anybody know where Club 12 is?" And finally, the last bar I stopped in, I remember what she looks like. Beautiful, nice, sweet lady behind the bar. She goes, "Honey, I think I know where you're looking for." And she directed me here. I was about 45 minutes late. But I started going to a 12-step kind of a once-a-week church recovery meeting, but I wasn't taking the steps. And for the next 10 years, again, I was 37 years old at this time, and it was the year 2000. And for the next 10 years, I would stay abstinent from alcohol for about a month or a few months or a week here, but I would always return to alcohol. I was let go of from my job, and I was given one-year severance. And I was an active alcoholic with a year's worth of salary in my pocket, and that wasn't helpful. Okay, I still wasn't taking the steps. I was going to Bible studies. I attempted to stop drinking. One thing that stands out in my mind is my wife came to me and said, "Hey, your Austin, my oldest son, he's embarrassed to bring the kid and his friends over because of your drinking." And I said, "We'll fix this. I know how to fix that." So I was out in the patio drunk, and I called Austin out, and I said, "Son, I got some good news. I've got some great news. I'm going to switch from drinking whiskey to drinking beer." Okay? And that was the solution. And I meant it with every fiber in my body that would solve the problem and help out the situation. I tried, the things that they talked about in the book. I abstained for a month. Of course, as an alcoholic trying to manage things, I picked February because it was the shortest month. And I believe I even failed with that. I asked God. I asked God, why am I not able to stop drinking? I'm going to a meeting a week. I got a sponsor. not really doing what he said, but I wanted to be cool. I wanted to be a cool kid too. Everybody else had sponsors. And I'm doing Bible studies. I'm doing, you know, all this. Why can I not stay sober? And it dawned on me about the story of that fella out in Katrina. Y'all remember Katrina, Hurricane Katrina? Do y'all? Out in New Orleans, Louisiana, all the destruction there. Well, there's this guy. He didn't leave when they called for evacuation. So the National Guard was going door to door, and they knocked on his door and said, "Hey, you got to get out of here. It's going to get rough." And he goes, "No, God's going to protect me." Sure enough, the water came, and you know the National Guard took a boat over there and said, "Jump in." He goes, "No, God's going to take care of me." And then, you know, the water got so high that he got on the roof, and the helicopter came and threw down the ladder and said, "Sir, come up." The guy goes, "No, God's going to protect me." And, you know, water came up. He died, and the guy was bewildered. He met God at the pearly gates and said, "God, I professed my faith. I said you protect me, and, you know, what's the deal?" And God said, "Hey, man, I sent you a jeep, a boat, and a helicopter. What more do you want?" And, you know, I find some similarities to that guy because God sent me the steps, but I didn't take them. Okay? So I was doing, when I would stay abstinent from alcohol during this 10-year period for a period of time, so I would do other unhealthy things. One year I played golf 104 times, okay, that was healthy. I gambled a lot, very unhealthy, but I always returned to my first love, alcohol. But nothing was changing within me, nothing. And my wife, I remember this clear as it was yesterday. She said, "Greg, I think you were nicer when you were drinking." And I wasn't that nice when I was drinking, okay? I mean, because nothing was changing. So I just want to kind of move into what happened. In 2010, my oldest son graduated from the Air Force Academy. We threw a party for him, and I had not drank at this time for 2 years. And after the party, I was cleaning up. It was about 1 or 2. In the morning, and I hadn't drank for 2 years. And I've been around liquor, but someone had given my son a expensive bottle of, you know, liquor. And I just looked at it and I said, "You know, I thought it would be a good, I think I'm going to drink that. I think I'm going to drink that." And that's what I did. And I passed out before I drank all of it, but I hid what was left in the garage, and I woke up not believing what I did, but I knew what the solution was. The solution was go drink the rest of it. And I went to drink the rest of it as soon as I woke up. My kids, I remember this to this day, they looked at me with just resignation and defeat, like just defeat. My second child, Rick, he said, "Dad, you hadn't drank for 2 years. Why did you do it?" And I said, I don't know. I was going to ask you the same question. I don't know. And I went and sat on my bed, and I'd run out of things to try. I'd run out of things to do. I had the most utter sense of being powerless that I've ever had in my life. And it was also hopeless. I was hopeless. And I said, "The only thing that I can do right now, because there's no way out of this thing, and I got nothing else to try, is to just go ahead and end it." So I was going through the thoughts of what I put down in my note and all that, and how to do it. And then for some reason, just a moment of sanity entered the picture, and I just kind of collapsed to the floor in a prostrate position. And I just said, "God, I don't want to die. I don't want to die. But I don't really know what to do. I just don't know what to do. But I don't want to die. I want to get better. So I crawled over to the phone and I called my sponsor, Manny B. And I said, "Manny, I'll do what you tell me to do. Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. I'm ready." And at that time, too, I kind of had, I don't know what you would call it. I'll just call it a spiritual experience. But I just felt God wrap his arms around me and said, "I got you, kid. I've been here all the time. I've just been waiting for you to be ready." And I started taking the steps, doing what my sponsor suggested. And this was, I was 47 years old, and this was July of 2010. Things started to get better. And I'm so pleased to report that I increased my meeting attendance. I went from one meeting to two meetings per week. Okay. And they were both church 12-step recovery settings. And that November, a few months later, I went deer hunting at a deer camp. No one knew I was in a program or even knew nothing about me, you know, getting sober and all that and going to the program. There wasn't any phone service. And out in the sticks, and I passed by the table, and there was my liquor of choice sitting there that someone brought. And I poured myself a big old stiff one. And no one knew what I did. And quite honestly, guys, it was a while before I admitted it. And as I started taking the steps, I realized how big of a deal honesty is to this program. And I was able to deal in a healthy manner with some very heavy baggage and character defects by being honest. Hope became, it started entering my life, man. But taking the steps, I made mistakes, a lot of mistakes. And a lot of them were usually centered around the ninth step, you know, making amends. One in particular is my wife and I, our big deal was going to movies. And we like to go to movies. And one time we went to go see a movie. I think I was on the step two, maybe step three. But I think it was step two at this time. We went to a movie. It was that movie with Kirk Cameron, Fireproof. I don't know if you've heard that about Kirk Cameron was a husband, marriage, and he was doing some things he weren't supposed to do, and they were having problems, and then everything got better at the end, and man, it tugged on me. And when I got home, I felt the Spirit of God convicting me to tell my wife about that one thing. I felt Jesus Christ himself screaming at me to tell my wife about that one thing. Well, what I didn't know then, what I know now, is that Jesus is not a screamer, okay? And when I told my sponsor what I'd done, is he said, if Jesus ever screams at you again, I just suggest you do nothing and give me a call, okay? And and anyway, I think I may have mentioned this, but we're divorced, all right? A couple years in sobriety, things were getting better, but something was missing. Something was missing. And I couldn't put my hand on it. I couldn't put my finger on it. And then one of the guys, I was just going to the church recovery for, you know, two meetings a week, but something was missing, man. And I just moved. And he goes, hey, there's a meeting over there by you, over there on Wurzbach and Nacogdoches. It's an AA meeting. And I'm embarrassed to say, but I'm just telling you, my perception of what AA people, I just thought AA people were a bunch of doorknob worshiping heathens, okay? And I was like at the end of the big book where it talks about contempt prior to investigation, that was me, all right? But I said, I'll go give it a try. So I walked in. And it was in my first or second meeting there at Serendipity. They got, you know, the cat and all that. And I think it was a candlelight meeting, all right? And I walked in. It was 8 o'clock on a Saturday night. And the lady that was chairing the meeting said, are y'all ready for the best meeting of your life? She was an enthusiastic, gung-ho person. I said, I am. I don't know what the hell this is all about, but I'm ready. And then they turned out the lights. And then the candles came on. And then the cat brushed up my leg. And you know what happened? You know what happened? You know what happened is I fell in love with you. I fell in love with you guys. And that launched my recovery. That really ramped up my recovery, is getting plugged in with AA. There's so many things about AA that has helped me so much in my recovery. And I just want to, you know, mention three of them that come to mind as being highly impactful. Number one is I started going to more meetings. You know, as I mentioned, I was at the church recovery. I went to all their meetings, all two of them. Each week, I was even leading one of them. I thought I was a recovery stud. here, shoot, they got three or four meetings a day. And I said, what's up with this? So I started to go into meetings all the time. And then I started, this one right here is the one that really, really impacted me. It's about service and carrying the message. I mean, I walked in there, they had a whiteboard. They're talking about going to this treatment center, to this detox, carrying the message here, doing this. And I said, wow, this blew my mind. And I started getting plugged into service and carrying the message. And that had just a huge impact on me. And I'm still involved in that because of the impact that it's had on my life. And the last thing I want to mention, and whenever I talk about this one, I always stumble because I'm not really sure how to explain it. But I'll try to do the best that I can here. Is when I walked into AA, there was something different from the standpoint of, there was talk about God, but no one told people, or no one told me how I should think God should look or act or be in my life. And there was a total inclusion for everybody, wherever they are. And I learned that it's best when I don't get in the middle between God and another person. And I just saw by this inclusion, I saw the true power of God in practice in AA. It was beautiful. It was something I'll be forever grateful for, and something I've really never been exposed to in my life. But there's many, many more impactful things about AA. The program has helped me through major adverse situations, divorce. I've got two kids that have been through multiple rehabs. One's 5 years sober and doing well now by the grace of God. The other one is a few months sober, and I'm so grateful for AA. Can I just real quick just pay homage to the Ninth Step Promises? Can I do that? What a joy realizing the promises mentioned in the Ninth Step. And I could talk a lot about that, but I just want to share one thing on the first three promises as my experience. The first one is, we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. AA and taking the steps had me awaken to the truth that my identity is in what God thinks about me, which is nothing but love. Not what other people think. I can stop being a people pleaser. I can burn the mask. I can be vulnerable and transparent. This promise definitely provides me a freedom and a new and a true happiness. Number two, we will comprehend the word serenity and know peace. I'm learning that as long as I am dependent on the program of AA, my peace is not dependent on my circumstances. Number three is, no matter how far down the scale we have gone, we can see how our experience can benefit others. How in the world, this took me a while to realize this, is how in the world can my miserable life be of use to anybody? I mean, 10 years, relapse, slip, you know. How in the world could it help anybody? And then all of a sudden, God started putting people in my life that were chronic relapsers, just like me. One guy I remember real well, and by the grace of God, he's still sober today. He came up to me, and he goes, "Greg, I heard you share. I'd like to be my sponsor, but I just let you know there ain't no hope for me. I've been to detox 9 times, and I'm hopeless." And I go, "Dude, you got air in your lungs, man. There's hope. Let me share my experience with you." And I said, "Yes, now I get it. Now I get it." So the promises have been beautiful. And now, as far as what it's like now, here's my routine. I have an app on my phone. It's called Spiritual Toolkit, okay, app. And what it does, it has the daily reflection. It has On Awakening when I read, that St. Francis prayer that we started out with. It has read that. I also do a devotion called Jesus Calling. That's part of my daily deal. And I love in On Awakening when it says to make use of other material. Okay, not to replace AA, but make use of other material. I do meditation. Got a centering prayer app on my phone. And I do some centering prayers, some meditation. And I get to some specific prayer. And occasionally I pray for myself, and occasionally I pray for myself when it's useful for others. Okay, but progress, right? All right. And AA program is actually ingraining in me a process to follow. And it's an example of this. Like step 10 is like one of the common tools that I use in my toolkit. And I go to step 10 and I do an inventory, and when I'm wrong, probably a minute, continuous inventory. And what I find, I don't know about you guys, but what I find is I sometimes do the step 10 in character defects are identified, and sometimes it's this consistent character defects that keep popping up. So good thing is I have in this grid called the 12 steps, I can pivot to other steps. Like I go to step 6 and determine, hey, am I really willing to have this character defect removed? And then I go to, if I am, then I go to step 7 and I humbly ask God and to remove them. And then I say, hey, am I really being humble? Okay, and if we're still having some irritability and unrest, then maybe I just go back to step 1 and say, do I really have I really admitted that I'm powerless over this thing? Or maybe step 2, which is, do I really believe that God can restore me here? Okay, or maybe step 3, am I holding on to something, or am I turning my will and my life over to care of God? Or maybe this thing that I was talking about my daily routine, the meditation and stuff, maybe it's a step 11 issue because I haven't done that for the last 3 days. Or what's my carrying the message looking like? So this grid and the pivoting within this recovery program is helping me keep my wheels on the rails, if you will. And it's also so grateful for these tools. And I'm also learning to talk to friends in AA in a revealing and transparent way. I learned that my character defects were standing in the way of accepting God's love. The steps in AA fellowship are having me awaken to the full measure of God's love. I was like, before I came to AA, I was like this cup, and I was walking around like this, upside down, and God's love was always pouring into me. Always, no matter what I was doing, where I was at, what my behavior love was, God's love was pouring into me, my experience. But I was deflecting it. I wasn't receiving it. And then as a result of taking these steps and the removal of some of these character defects, then what's happened is I started walking around like this, and I started receiving God's love, and it started filling me up. But that's not the best thing. The best thing is when I'm filled up, God's love doesn't stop. God's love, what does it do? It overflows to other people. And that's beautiful. And someone told me, said, Greg, you can't love everybody. And I go, hey, if I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs, and if I'm getting filled up with God's love, and it's overflowing to other people, it's impossible for me not to love everybody. What a gift. Sometimes I get wobbly, like I'm in a tunnel. I may work these things, but I'm just stuck, man. Life is tough, and I'm so glad that this isn't a solo sport, man, that I'm not supposed to do this by myself. So many, there's people in this room that I see that has helped me through big-time problems, and when I'm in a tunnel, I just go to them. And because sometimes when I'm really stuck, reading a book isn't going to get it. I need someone to share their experience with me. I need someone to help me by saying me too and start that healing process and tell me while I'm in the tunnel that light ain't a train at the end. You know what I mean? My relationship with my kids is being restored. My daughter, who would not talk to me, is turning into one of my best friends. My kids are asking, here's the deal. I love it when my kids now call me and start out the conversation with this. Dad, I got this going on, and I would like your opinion. Whoa! Where did that come from? Okay. My kids are asking me my opinion. My relationship with my relatives are very healthy now. My dad, who died last year, he died with a four-year chip on his table. Okay. And my last 4 years, I had a daddy experience that I didn't have for the rest of my life. It was beautiful by the grace of God. My stepdad, who we were, it was just terrible. We're tight right now. I've had a couple sponsors in my life. One, Manny B, he would move to Pittsburgh. I had another sponsor, Greg S. And he's so loving and so patient with me. And man, I don't know, but allergies are getting bad, aren't they? And I'm so grateful for that. He's always there for me. I have a girlfriend that is better than anything that I could have ever imagined. I've never had a girl. I was married like for almost 30 years, okay? And I never really had a girlfriend. She was kind of the same way. And AA's been instrumental to the health of our relationship. God is in the middle of our relationship. We pray when we part, thanking God for being in control of our lives and asking Him to direct our steps. Her kids are just beautiful daughters that she has, of 22 and 19. Maybe, and they're in a situation to where maybe they need a positive man in their life, okay? And I'm able to do that now by God's grace. And and I just want to say that a lot of people don't get this second chance as far as kids go, you know, but I did, and I'm holding on to it tight. I'm so grateful for it. I want to close out what it's like now with, let me just say that my life used to suck and it don't suck now. Okay. My life turned around when I immersed myself into the practices and principles of AA. It is my hope to continue receiving this gift and passing it on. Let's close out with page 164, reading the last two paragraphs. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Let's close in the usual manner with the Lord's Prayer.